The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to Vox Markets. I am John Heumann, and I'm delighted to be joined by Ilyan Ilyev, CEO of Net Scientific PLC, the deep tech and life sciences investor. How are you doing, Ilyan?
John, I'm very well, and very good to see you today.
Yeah, you too. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us today. You put out a business strategy and portfolio update recently, but I think perhaps the best place to start before we come into the details of that is if you could introduce the business and yourself in a little more detail.
Yeah, sure. So look, Net Scientific is essentially a listed VC platform with a strong focus on the deep tech space. What we mean by deep tech is everything from med tech through to robotics, AI, and industrials. And while it feels broad to the outside world, to us, it's areas that have a shared common theme around strong IP, reliance on corporate partnerships for growth, and areas where we can add value with the structure, which I'll describe in a second. We believe that in the current markets that are seeing a significant change in where institutions put their money within the venture capital universe, we believe that the opportunities are coming our way. There's been obviously a clear change in the markets around the traditional SaaS, media, digital businesses. We've gone through that cycle. It's not the first time we're seeing a cycle start and end, and it's now coming towards deep tech. So our model is really almost designed to capture the opportunity. Now, how do we do it? As a PLC, of course, we have a modest balance sheet where we can take opportunities as they come along to us. But we enhance and complement our funding capability with a syndication practice. EMV Capital is a subsidiary of Net Scientific PLC, which is FCA authorized. And that subsidiary can basically fundraise for businesses. And we're now also looking at launching a fund practice. That's really important because I think some of our peers in the market that are purely from balance sheet are always at a risk from changing fortunes of the market. In our case, we're able to continue to support our businesses through the different cycles, maximizing opportunities, but also protecting the PLC shareholdings in those businesses. Yeah. That is one side of our business. The other side of our business is what we call value creation services. And this is where a little bit similar to the private equity space, where an investor will go and take a big stake and then they'll deploy capabilities to improve that business before they sell it off. We're bringing a little bit of that thinking here to the venture capital space. So alongside our fundraising capability, we have value creation services where we work with companies on placing chief executives or C-suite people or board people, as well as helping them with specialist capabilities around IP, around the finance infrastructure and so on. When you combine those two, you actually have a very nimble, very pragmatic and very fast-paced approach to helping companies in the deep tech space. Now, a bit about myself. A lot of what we do here is in many ways drawn on my multidisciplinary practice going back some years. For my sins, my PhD was focused on economics, but in particular, innovation finance and how innovation is funded in different economies. And that was quite some time ago now, but a lot of the thinking around that has made its way to previous businesses that I have started that have looked at how to accelerate and monetize IP technology and licensing in these companies. And indeed, when I started EMV Capital, years before it was acquired by Net Scientific, how do you build this customized approach for investment in deep tech, recognizing it's a different space? So it's the combination of these capabilities plus my multidisciplinary team that I think gives us a slightly different signature in the venture capital space.
Yeah, indeed. It looks very different indeed. Let's talk perhaps before we come on to that in a bit more detail about the portfolio itself. 23 companies. Perhaps give us a sort of flavor of what that portfolio looks like.
Yeah, sure. So the portfolio covers life sciences, deep tech, and sustainability. It's the result of both the combination of Net Scientific's life sciences portfolio and EMV Capital's hardware industrials portfolio back in 2020 when Net Scientific acquired EMV, and fresh investments ever since. To give you a sense of the breadth of it, in terms of stages of investment, we have one company that is NASDAQ listed, PDS Biotech. When I came on the board of PDS a few years back, they only had several phase one trials. We now have four phase two trials, companies preparing for a phase three trial, but also there is a lot of recognition in the market for how strong this science is and so on. But what's been actually quite useful for our UK portfolio is just the first-hand observation of how Nasdaq works, its challenges and promises. That's really important in helping our UK portfolio companies in think through the US growth strategy or US fundraising strategy. And of course, the reality is that Nasdaq is not for everyone. It's a very specific channel to use. Next to PDS, what I'll flag is Sofant Technologies. Now, Sofant is a Edinburgh University spin-out focused on the telecom space. It's a semiconductors company, and semiconductors is notoriously difficult to get right. But we have worked with the business over several years, over several funding rounds, growing from a small investor to we're now the largest investor in that business, a combination of Net Scientific, direct holding, and capital under advisory from our advised investor community. Now, what the company has grown is basically an antenna for satellite communications that's going to the next stage. This is targeted at the Starlink type of satellite constellations with low orbit, medium orbit satellites. Only a few years ago, this was really geek domain, sort of cartoon territory. Now it's in the mainstream. Now you see people talk about this type of technology all the time. You see it around the Ukraine war from a national security perspective. You can see it in building our resilience in the UK and internationally. And you see it from a civilian application with all these autonomous vehicles, terrestrial and otherwise, that need access to data. Sofant provides a solution for those situations. Another example is Qbot, which is a robotics company in the built environment. Over several years, Qbot has built and delivered a robotics platform for retrofitting insulation under the floor, starting with UK housing, now also internationalizing in Europe and the US. They've done more than 4,500 installations in the UK. They're well known in the market sector. But for us, what's interesting there is that Qbot fits in within the broader digitization and transformation of the construction industry. Now, look, I've given you three examples of the 23, but what I hope comes across is our high passion, high conviction about all of our businesses. I've got a strong research team here in-house that we spend a lot of time getting to know our businesses, not only before the investment, clearly, but post-investment. By being close to them because of our value creation services, it means our investors can be assured that we really know what's happening inside, inside these companies. And this has led to a sort of a positive symbiosis, if you will, between what we do, what our investor network knows that we do, and I would say a high level of trust that we're helping these businesses grow always in interesting markets that are undergoing a transformation.
Yeah, indeed. You've sort of half preempted my next question was going to be how the deal origination process worked. How do you find these type of companies at the cutting edge of the industries they're transforming?
Well, the first thing is that both myself and my extended team, we've been in this space for many years. We're not what we call deep tech tourists, you know, that, well, fintech didn't work out, so let's give it a try. How different can it be? We've been doing this for a very long time. We have a strong network, both in the UK and internationally, that provides us access to interesting deals. A lot of this comes from family offices that we work with closely, corporates and industrials, the corporate venturing side. But also we have our own essentially proprietary deal flow. I'll give you one example. We are an investor in Martlet Capital, which is an early stage venture capital fund in the Cambridge high tech cluster. As many of your listeners will know, Cambridge is ranked probably third, possibly fourth globally in terms of the concentration of deep tech startups and level of venture capital attracted there. It is a really, really strong ecosystem, but also a little bit of a closed shop. And with our friends at Matlet Capital, we're able to identify really interesting opportunities quite early on, co-invest with them where appropriate, and build it to the next level. So this provides us with a structured proprietary deal flow in that cluster. We have similar relationships with partners in Israel, in Belgium, and elsewhere. So what that means is that we're a relatively small player, but in a way we punch above our weight in terms of access to deal flow and in information. And of course, access to deal flow is not just about the opportunity to invest, because there's only so many opportunities we have or so many investments we can make. It's having access to networks. It's having access to knowledge. It's being part of the conversation when it happens so that we can connect the dots when the right opportunity comes along for us to be able to see not only how we get in, but how we get out and make money for our investors.
Yeah. And you know, you're not just in the sort of in the heart of the tech network, but the financial side of things is, you're being extremely successful on that side too. A huge year for fundraising. Can you talk us through, you know, what you've been up to on that front, the monies that you've successfully raised for the portfolio?
Okay. So I think, I mean, looking at last year, nobody can say they were extremely successful. It was an incredibly difficult year in the markets, but we've been moderately successful. Look, what we saw last year is, and speaking to my team, is, look, it's going to be a tough year. We have to be defensive. Forget new deals. Let's focus on defending our portfolio and getting them to the next stage. By and large, that has worked. Across the group's portfolio of 23 companies, we've seen roughly £52 million of external investment. Not our money, that's the total money that's gone into into 13 of the 23 companies. A number of other companies had funded the previous year. So it's been moderately successful in terms of enabling the companies to continue growing, to continue on their roadmap while sustaining their financial status. For EMV Capital itself, we've brought roughly £6.5 million into the portfolio. Some of that money is quite powerful. You know, often if we anchor a deal or if we are the first investor with a relatively small check, that will unlock other funding. For instance, in SoFund, we have Scottish Enterprise as a matched funder in terms of the original development mandate. So when we have invested, they have matched our funding. There's similar situations elsewhere that a little bit of money from us has unlocked more money from others. So in terms of our in-house growth practice, that's composed both of EIS money, which is increasingly successful and a very important part of the UK funding ecosystem, as well as family office money, where we work with several family office players who are able to move fast for the right sort of opportunities. Importantly, when we bring money to these businesses, we make money. We charge a corporate finance fee, which goes towards paying for all this infrastructure.
Yeah. And, you know, as well as raising money, you're obviously seeking to become, you know, self-sustaining in terms of the operations of Net Scientific Self. And EMV is an important part of this, as is your plans to develop a fund management practice. Can you talk us through that and how that gets you to your objective, which is part of your sort of 5-point strategy of being sort of a capital light, financially self-sustaining model?
Absolutely. So, look, our fund strategy going forward will be an important part of the business. We recently obtained our direct FCA license, so we can now launch and manage funds within the FCA framework, of course. And, you know, as you know, the FCA on a global basis has a high level of sophistication, so we're quite proud that we have that status now. But I think if you look at the market more broadly, in any given moment, there is any given number of teams running around with a deck raising a fund. Funds come and go. From our perspective, look, we want to build something that stays. We want to build something sustainable. And our fundraising strategy is to work collaboratively with strong GP teams, fund teams that we have a belief in, strong fund managers that we have worked with, have co-invested with, gotten to know, partner with them. They would have access to our infrastructure, to our deals team, to our transactional team, but they would bring expertise in the specific sector that we're focused on. And going about it that way, we anticipate that Net Scientific, in addition to what we already do, which is not insubstantial, we would scale our capability to matter in the industry, to build up our portfolio through this partnering approach to funds. We're actively working on two opportunities, which naturally I can't discuss here, but there's other opportunities in the pipeline that we're looking at.
And this will bring fee income with it, presumably.
Absolutely. Now, on that, just a note, it would be wrong to launch a fund with the purpose of getting management fees. The reason one launches a fund is to make money for their investors and therefore for the company or the management to make carried interest from the capital gains.
Yeah.
However, it does have the positive side effect of paying for infrastructure. So, yes, absolutely. Launching a fund's infrastructure will lead to recurring management fees for Net Scientific. I have to emphasize, while we are negotiating a number of those, this is not a forecast, it's not a commitment, it hasn't happened yet. But in terms of the direction of travel, this is what we're focused on.
Yeah, and obviously that infrastructure is going to be crucial to help you unlock the value that you've so far been proven able to create. The other thing that I noticed that you've done is really strengthening the team behind the business. Not least the bringing in Charles Spicer as chairman. Talk us through what Charles brings to the party and what you hope that does for the business.
Absolutely. Well, maybe first I'll talk about our thinking of the board structure as a whole, and then focusing on Charles and Jonathan. So from our perspective, look, you know, we have to straddle the requirements of a POC company, which is excellent, strong governance, transparency, respect for the shareholders, and on the other hand, having a nimble, fast, pragmatic board and operation that can take up opportunities as they come. We are in the VC space. We are a relatively small player in the VC space. What we differentiate ourselves is with speed, pragmatism, and ability and creative thinking. And in that sense, we have built up a board that is rich in a transactional city and business building experience. Putting aside myself, my other executive director is Ed Hooper, who has immense experience as a corporate lawyer. He was a partner at a major city law firm. He has a wealth of experience in corporate M&A transactions, VC, IPOs, and so on, which has vastly increased our speed and depth of what we are able to do. And of course, the team we're building around ourselves. Dr. Jonathan Robinson, who joined as a senior investment independent director, has also significant experience in building businesses, listing businesses, and driving organizational change. And finally, Charles. We were really pleased for Charles to join us, in some ways punching above our weight. Charles is, I believe, well known to a lot of the city as a serial successful investment banker, M&A banker in the life sciences and biotech space in the UK, as well as a career as a chair and a non-executive director. And last but not least, an accomplished historian, which is giving us lots of things to talk about. But again, the combination of the capabilities in this team mean that when we meet, we can get to the point fast. We can make informed, cautious, ultimately quick decisions where it matters, or decide not to do things. And this is, you know, sometimes POCs have a reputation for being slow and bureaucratic. We're trying to prove the opposite, that a POC can be dynamic and can punch above its weight when it comes to our sector.
Yeah, indeed. I guess over the long term, the real value is going to come through growing your stakes in your portfolio companies and ultimately creating exit events where you can realize that value. Can you talk us through how you identify and create effective routes to exit for portfolio companies, which is one of the, again, the key planks of your 5-point strategy?
Well, I mean, I've got a saying, or maybe one of my old investors got a saying, that it's easy to get your money and getting them out is the tricky part. A bit like the old saying that there's two happy moments of a sailboat's owner, once when he buys it, once when he sells it. But putting that aside, look, we have a highly structured approach to building our portfolio. As you gather, we're also a little bit impatient at times in terms of getting to the next stage. What we are not is we're not a patient observer of what will happen to us. You know, we are proactive with our portfolio management. And the way we look at exit opportunities is, look, if you leave it to generate an exit in 3 months, you've left it for too long. Using our value creation services infrastructure and the experience of people like Charles Spicer, you know, from an M&A perspective, we're building an infrastructure for our companies to put them on a exit readiness roadmap. Now, the right exit might take a year, might take 2 years, might take 3 years. It's about maximizing the value and picking the right moment. However, what we found, especially in the UK, is that companies often leave it too late to consider, well, gee, who is our natural acquirer? Is it an IPO or a trade sale? Is it going to be from this sector or that sector? Because each of those options needs to percolate all the way back to the strategy today in terms of making investment choices. Are we going to build a huge logistics enterprise because we want to be an OEM? Or do we want to show that we can enter multiple markets and have a licensing strategy? These key strategic choices ultimately need to be linked with the exit strategy of the company. So the way we work with our businesses is certainly pushing them on the strategic aspects of the exit strategy, but also we're building a panel, or have built a panel, of M&A advisors for companies in different sectors and different stages of development, so that we can also give exposure to our companies to what the M&A advisors will tell them. Listen, if you want to exit 18 months from now, this is what you ought to consider. The first outcome of this process is what we recently announced with Proaxis, that we have appointed an M&A advisor for that company. And we're working closely with the Proaxis leadership to pump, prime, and prepare the company for such an exit. It is not a rushed exit. It is also not a dogmatic exit. It can be a full exit. It can be a partial exit. But again, it shows our process of thinking around this, how hand in hand with company management, we can work to prepare them all the way through to realizing value.
Yeah, absolutely. No, but it's certainly a unique approach, and one that I think is already showing some great signs of success in unlocking the huge amount of deep tech potential that exists certainly here within the UK. Ilion, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.